Techstars or the Y Combinators of the world, they happen to come at a bit more later stage when you already have a team. Whereas the Antlers, they happen to come when you are an individual. So that's a distinction when you're making the choice. They have been a boom in this Indian startup ecosystem as well. The product-based companies have flourished as well. So there is another set of talent that is coming from product-based companies as well.
Is India as a country thinking about that and trying to think about how to sort of absorb that new sort of AI that might replace them?
Now, that's an interesting question to start with, Kim.
You're watching Next Big Wave, the podcast for founders by founders in Southeast Asia. In this episode, we're going to talk about founder journeys, growth strategies, and much more. Just to help me out, if you could like and subscribe, it would be awesome. And let's get into the episode.
All right, welcome to today's episode of Next Big Wave. Today, I'm joined by Abhinav Balagoni, all the way from Bangalore, India. Abhinav, welcome to the show. Thanks for logging in. I know we've rescheduled a few times, but I really appreciate you taking the time to be on the show today.
Hey, hi, Tim. Glad to join the show. Have heard great things about this.
Appreciate that. So today's quite interesting because we're going to discuss a slightly different journey than others, where you as a person went from an employee to a founder and back to an employee and now working as the senior product manager at Delivery. Super interested to kind of hear your background and how you ended up deciding to go back into working full-time for a different company. So maybe walk us through your journey overall, and then we'll end up kind of going deeper into what you did as a founder and what made you decide to go back into product management for someone else.
Sure. I'll start with what I'm doing currently and what I have done previously, and then I'll come to the part as to how I made the transition.
I love it.
So currently I'm working as a senior product manager on a SaaS application called DispatchOne. Essentially, we are trying to manage the last mile deliveries for businesses, wherein they can track their riders, vehicles, and complete the deliveries in the last mile leg of the entire dispatch process. Now, previously, I was a founder where we were building a cross-border finance app. We were backed by Techstars, venture capital, VC firm. And then we were building this cross-border finance app aimed for international students to solve two pain points for them. And during this process, while we made that decision to shut down the business, I had to figure out what to do next. And there were two options primarily, again, to startup or essentially to join corporate career. Now, based on my learnings, which we'll get into details later, I decided that I would want to pursue a corporate career. Now, while doing this, I was figuring out how do I approach this. Now, for me, I believe that an industry or a market where there isn't being much done with respect to digitization or where there's a lot of unstructured data, I believe that that is an industry or a market where there would be a lot of business opportunities going forward as well. And I was trying to figure out what kind of industries those would be. And I've come across a bunch of them. Right now, I'm logistics or supply chain industry, but then there is medical or insurance. There are a bunch of other industries I've explored as well. But given the nature of opportunities available and that were accessible at that point of time, I figured that supply chain or logistics as an industry was pretty ripe for disruption, given that there's vast, I would say significant amount of unstructured data, and most of the workflows are manual workflows, very operationally intensive, not very much, the digitization hasn't necessarily crept into the last layer of the operations. So yes, there is a lot of automation, but then I felt that there's an industry that's. And another interesting thing when I was looking at markets is the universal nature of these markets. Because again, a specific industry could work in a specific way in a specific part of the world, right? So I was looking at the universal appeal of that market challenges as well. So based on these few parameters, that's how I figured supply chain or logistics to be an industry where I would want to spend a few years of my time.
Okay, so you're taking this as an opportunity to learn about a new industry. And perhaps one day build something there, right? Is that what I'm getting from this?
I would say so. Because essentially, when I was... Okay, let me put it this way. Like, when I was trying to build my previous startup, there were a few learnings. One was that I was a recent graduate. I didn't know much about the financial services as an industry. So it took a lot of while for us to get that initial product out, to get those partnerships done for building the product and those kind of things. Second part is when we're trying to make two changes with respect to the product itself. There was, since it's a highly regulated industry, not knowing those kind of limitations actually dampened our product trajectory as well. So what I've realized is having a domain knowledge or a domain skill set probably would help with respect to product building part of the process. So that was my first learning, and that's what I was trying to optimize for during this transition as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that makes sense. Yeah, it's tough building something from scratch when you're kind of just starting out in your career. I've been there. It definitely takes a lot of learning and a lot of wasted time that you can leapfrog if you learn from one of the leaders in the market, right? And you've been talking a lot about unstructured data. So do I take it that your background is in data analysis? Are you an engineer? What's your background from a study standpoint?
Got it. So I did a bachelor's in electronics and communication engineering from National Institute of Technology, Warangal in India. Post that, I did my master's in business analytics from Singapore Management University. So I do have business analytics background or electronics and telecom background. But I think primarily this focus on unstructured data is just because of the nature of the businesses or the products or SaaS products that would be built going forward. That is my take on this. So I believe that the existing set of tools or the SaaS applications, as they call it, they are more like a tool to for a person to perform a certain task within a certain working environment, right? Whereas what I believe would be the next nature of SaaS applications would be is that they would be far more outcome focused than the workflow focused. So in order for an application to get to a level where they can determine the outcome, I think they would have to take into consideration not just the data available on the SaaS tool, but also the unstructured data or the data which is not available part of the SaaS tool, like the emails, meetings, chats, market intelligence. There could be a bunch of other data that needs to be pulled in together, and that's how they could act and deliver the outcome, not just the results of it. So my understanding is that is how the next set of applications would be built like, and that's why I was figuring out what kind of industry or market presents these kind of opportunity for these kind of applications, SaaS applications.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, that's interesting that you're discussing stuff like that, because in Southeast Asia, we have this problem that I've realized, like trying to build SaaS is extremely difficult. Most companies that should and could benefit from SaaS are quite reticent to spend money on software when, first of all, they're not experienced in making those types of payments, but also they feel that, you know, labor is so cheap that they can replace these processes with you know, human labor and not bother paying for SaaS. So my understanding is in India is a lot more ahead in that regard, because SaaS and startups in general are booming over there. But SaaS specifically, can you enlighten me on, you know, why you think that India has adopted the SaaS model a lot faster than the rest of Southeast Asia?
If you're watching this and you're a B2B startup founder in Southeast Asia struggling to grow your startup, we have a whole community of founders just like you. And on a weekly basis, we discuss strategies and growth hacks. We'd love to have you amongst us. Feel free to join at nextbigwave.co or find the link in the description. I'll see you there.
I can talk with respect to how these SaaS businesses are built in India and why probably they are probably a bit far ahead in the curve than the
I'd love to hear it. I'm very curious.
I think if you look at it from a market evolution point of view, right? India has been the hotbed for the IT services revolution since the early 2000s or late 90s as well. So there is a certain set of talent that is already exposed to software business problems that could be solved by using software. So they have built these custom softwares, and that's how the software services industry has been built. Now, if you look at the software services that could be built, they have essentially productized these software services, and that's how they had built software applications or software as a service applications. Now, that was the second wave of software applications. Now, some of this talent, which has already been exposed to software services, they have been part of the second wave of applications as well. And then, right, I think early 2010 or mid 2015 time frame, they have been a boom in this Indian startup ecosystem as well. The product based companies have flourished as well. So there is another set of talent that is coming from product based companies as well. I think they essentially grabbed this opportunity that, hey, there is already a market available for Indian companies out there that build these software services for addressing business problems. They could build SaaS applications to solve those business problems as well. And that's how they started building these businesses, SaaS businesses out of India. And that's why you see that there are a bunch of these SaaS businesses, strong SaaS companies coming out of India. I think that's just the nature of evolution of the software services in India. And because of the combination of product culture and product startups being flourishing in India, I think mix of both these factors contributed to this.
Okay, so the consumers of SaaS are also the people who produce the SaaS. So they just understand the model. And at this stage, it's already matured enough that these engineers have, you know, grown to a certain level of authority in those companies that they decide to invest in SaaS rather than people. Is that kind of the idea?
So there are two parts to this, right? One is most of the markets for SaaS companies in India is predominantly outside of India. Yes, there are SaaS SaaS consumption in India, but predominantly it's outside of India. So people doing these kind of businesses with companies outside of India is prevalent in the IT services industry. So that business market and the people who have been involved in that space were available. Now, the second set of talent, which is engineering talent or the product or the design talent that has been building products, that talent was also available after the first wave of consumer startups in India. So consumer product startups have flourished during the early 2010 to in between to 2050. And this talent, engineering talent, along with the business talent coming together, gave birth to the SaaS companies being created in India, which went on to become really large companies. That is how I would view it. Yes, and having said that, since there is already talent in the higher management who's aware of these business opportunities, it becomes easy for them to take a bet on people trying to build SaaS applications for these set of markets. Probably that also helped with respect to that, taking that early risk in the early stage of the company building process as well. So multiple factors contributed to that.
All right, makes sense. Well, thanks for sharing. Yeah, I don't know much about India, to be honest. Like I mentioned to you pre-recording, I've heard a lot of great things about Bangalore, a lot of great engineers. Can you kind of describe overall India as a market? Like that, you know, like you said, historically, it's been an IT hub of like nearshoring and offshoring of other countries. But can you kind of describe India as a whole, maybe not on the market side, but more on the supply side, how it's evolving, how is AI affecting India? How are they thinking about it? Because I think all of that is quite relevant these days.
Sure, certainly. I think there are two set of companies that are getting built, primarily with respect to startups, right? There is consumer-facing startups that are being built for Indians, the local consumption here. And then there are business-facing applications or SaaS applications that are being built for businesses based in India and outside of India, predominantly. Now, AI or next-generation applications, both of them would affect both set of startups. But having said that, I think when you talk specifically about Bangalore, Bangalore has been a hub for predominantly these, I would say, both consumer-facing startups as well as SaaS-based startups. So there's already product-oriented engineers, product engineers, as they call it. There's already product talent, design talent. Some of them are world-class talent as well. Some of the products which you use, like Swiggy and others, they're as good as it gets. So there's already this, combination of talent that is available for building the next set of applications involving even AI as well. So there is a lot of possibilities that you would see a strong AI companies being built in Bangalore, given the nature of the capital that is available, given the nature of talent that is available, given the exposure they already have to the market. I think mixing together all these factors would essentially lead to strong AI companies going forward. That's my take on Bangalore ecosystem.
I see. But what I mean is more, and I respect that. And I think a lot of great things will come out of India in respect to AI. But I've been speaking to founders in the Philippines, for example, and they're worried that AI is going to sort of wipe out a lot of those sort of, you know, easier accessible jobs like design, like front end developers and things that AI is starting to do really, really well. And I believe India has a big talent pool of people working in the BPO industry, as well as, like, you know, kind of like early junior designer, junior developers, things that AI can easily wipe out. Is India as the country thinking about that and trying to think about how to sort of absorb that new sort of AI that might replace them?
Now, that's an interesting question to start with, Kim. I think that's a challenge, frankly. I don't think the market is actually have a readily available solution for it. Yes, most of the repetitive work, most of the junior level of work that would get automated. and there would be significant reduction in those kind of employment opportunities. Now, how do people go about addressing it? I think people are still figuring it out. One way is to upskill yourself and try and get those high-skilled jobs, but they would be limited in number. How do you go about providing a large number of opportunities? One thing I would see is probably they would be, the nature of work would probably be different. Going forward, probably people, there will be far large number of freelancers or probably people who rent out a significant time rather than just working with one significant company. Probably they'll be working with a bunch of other companies, and that's how they'll distribute their time and effort within a week or within a month as well. So that could be another different nature of work or employments they would have. And that also works given that these labor marketplace essentially would become a global talent place. So you could work with company that's based out of your, not necessarily out of your country, probably outside of your country. So that's how the nature of work could evolve. But that could be the next wave of how the employment would look like right now. Because if you see, most of these cross-border nature of employment or the work nature is limited to businesses. Businesses outside in different countries tend to collaborate for a business outcome. Going forward, probably they could collaborate directly with individuals. That would probably absorb the shock of reduction of jobs in the junior level or the BPO kind of industries. So that's my take. We would have to see how that goes.
Yeah, let's see how it goes. Very curious to see in the next 5-10 years. So, you know, your company, the cross-border finance tax credit, can you walk us through, you know, you worked on it for 6 years and then you decided to wind it down. I understand that the first few years took time to kind of learn about the market and make a few mistakes, but what ultimately happened with the company, if you're comfortable sharing, because I think it's really important to learn from not only just success stories, but also some, you know, many of us, you know, closed down companies have defeats here and there. So I'd love to learn what happened with that business and why you ultimately decided to wind it down.
I think to start with, there were a couple of things. The first one was the initial assumption of the business model that we could make money, sustainable money, just by taking a part of the transaction, of the payment transaction, turned out to be not so sustainable. So we had to build a full stack finance app. That's how we evolved from a product perspective in order to get better margins or revenue with respect to the payment transactions, the card-based transactions. So that required significant investment in the infrastructure to create those kind of products. So that was one challenge. The other challenge I would say was with respect to distribution as such, because finance as a product or as a category is driven primarily by consumer trust. So as a no-name startup, as a tiny startup, when we were asking people to trust us with tens of thousands of dollars, that became really challenging for us to be able to gather or gain that trust. So I would say those were a few things which I believe we could have solved better. And that's the reason why we felt I would probably have to have a much better understanding of the market along with the problem for probably my next attempt. So that's what I'm currently working on.
Okay. Did you have co-founders or was it just you?
So I was a sole founder, but then we were a founding team of 3 members. So we had 2 founding engineers who happened to be my friends. We happened to have known each other for years. We have worked on multiple projects together. So that's how we came together and built the startup.
And they're also working full-time jobs now. They went on and built something else.
As currently, both of them are working full-time jobs.
So my question is, like, do you see yourself building something with them again? Because I realize, like, people who find good co-founders and people they like and they're familiar with, they like to build more things together. So I'm curious if you've already started thinking about that.
Most likely, they'll be part of the next venture as well. Sure.
Makes sense. Cool. So now you're in this new role. You're kind of learning about a new industry. What would make you tick and decide, like, okay, now's the right time to build something in the, you know, in the last mile area or something similar logistically?
I think I'm still trying. Sure, I have been exposed to the last mile leg of the industry within logistics, and logistics has first mile, mid mile, and last mile. So there are 3 legs of the entire journey. I'm just getting a grasp of the logistics industry as such, but supply chain as a whole is much bigger than just logistics part of it. I'm still trying to figure out the supply chain, entire supply chain industry or the workflows or the multiple players involved in this. So I think it would take a few years before I would probably venture out to build another startup. And the other part is I wanted to be exposed to another, like probably much higher level of talent and much higher level of startups, which are at a much higher trajectory than what we have currently, what I have been currently exposed to. Probably that will give me an understanding as to how to go about solving problems in an efficient way, in an effective way. So those are a few things I still have to figure out. I would say probably a few years away from before venturing out again.
All right, you got to absorb the hit. One question I get a lot in this podcast and outside the podcast is, you know, we have a lot of different incubators and accelerators in the region, you know, Antler, Iterative, Entrepreneur First, Techstars, etc. You decided to go with Entrepreneur First and Techstars. Can you walk me through, you know, how you decided to work with them and how was your experience with each one individually?
I think two things, right? Firstly, Techstars or the Y Combinators of the world, they happen to come at a bit more later stage when you already have a team, whereas the kind of Entrepreneur First or Antlers, they happen to come when you are an individual. So that's a distinction when you're making a choice. Next, with respect to Entrepreneur First or Antler, these are individual first kind of incubators, right? You have built something in the previous, or you are trying to figure out something. You have a faint idea of what to do. You happen to have worked in this domain for a while, or things like that, which are you haven't necessarily figured out what to do and whom to do with. I think that's when these talent incubators, as they call them, are a good place to find similar like-minded people who are also in a similar space in their career trajectory. So you can actually figure out how, whether you like to work together for to solve a business problem, to build a business together, and that's how you can come together. So pooling, having a pool of like-minded people who are in similar career phase is what these talent incubators provide. Apart from that, they also have mentorship. They also have people who have been through that process and they've done that. So that also helps. So with respect to both these talent incubators, frankly, both of them, even though I have been part of Entrepreneur First, I have heard good things about Antler as well. So both of them are really good choices. I do not have a preference over that. Second part is with respect to accelerators, right? Globally, I mean, right now there are a bunch of them. But back then when I was working on a startup, there were three to five really good accelerator programs. Y Combinator being one, Techstars being another one, 500 Startups. There are a bunch of others as well in Valley. So these are all global accelerator programs. So global teams across the world, they tend to apply for these programs. So when you get into these programs, it's far more structured. It's far more rigorous. The expectations at the end of program are far more higher. So that is a key distinction between the incubators and the accelerators. And essentially, by the end of this program, you are expected to go and raise. That's the primary focus usually. In some cases, you could delay that probably by 3 months or 6 months. But essentially, they make you fundraising ready because these are all venture-scale startups. They tend to go after large markets. There is a lot of capital required to get to that point. So that's another important support these accelerator programs provide. And even post-graduation, right? Both these set of alumni networks are strong enough that if you reach out to them for any kind of support, they tend to actually respond and actually help you out. So even from that perspective, that's another helpful factor of being part of any of these networks.
Okay, very cool. And I'm not familiar with Entrepreneur First. Actually, Techstars even. It's been a while since I've spoken about them. What kind of deal do they make? Like, do they fund you for equity? Or like, I forgot about what Techstars does. Entrepreneur First, I assume, is very similar to Antler. So not sure how much they give you and how much they take, but maybe you can walk us through the financials there.
Sure, certainly. I think they pay you a monthly stipend. The program duration, Entrepreneur First, was about 3 months, close to 12 weeks or 13 weeks. So usually they tend to give you a monthly stipend. And at the end of 8 weeks, second month is when there is usually an incubation. There is a review process or something where they tend to review your business and you would have to find a team or co-founder by then, would have to do some kind of market validation. And then towards the end of third month is when they identify some teams and they find for the next phase of their company building process. That is how it is. So till that third month, ideally, there is no equity talk that happens. And at the end of the third month, when they try and put in capital for the next phase of the company building process, that's when there is equity sharing model that is being proposed. So that's how it works with respect to entrepreneur first. And with respect to TechStars, I think they straight up give you money before the start of the program, and they take equity before the start of the program. And then during those next 3 months, there are different ways they help you build a better product, better market targeting or positioning, or do you have a set of mentors you closely work with during those 3 months. And then towards the end of the program, you have a fundraising or demo day, that, as they call it, where you get exposed to investor community, and that's how you go about building, raising funds for your company. So that is the primary focus of accelerator programs. So this is how it looks like.
Are they also investing? Like YC, I think, is $500,000 for 7%. I think it's similar with Techstar.
Back in the day, it was 120K. YC used to give 120K for 7%. Techstars used to give similar 120K for 6% or 7%. I don't remember, but it's similar. Yeah, back in the day, it was very similar. But then I think YC upped the bar. They actually made it 500K.
Yeah, yeah. Cool. And just, you know, talking about your personality as a whole, like, you went straight into entrepreneurship. What made you do that? Do you have a family history amongst entrepreneurs, or did you get inspired as a younger man, like from movies? Like, what made you want to build a company? I'm curious, so quickly.
Sure. I think a couple of factors that have added. I mean, that was not my first startup. There was another startup I attempted during my last year of my undergrad, along with my friend. So that was my first startup. We got our first paycheck done. There were interesting stories around it. But then I think it started off as a hobby, as a cool thing to do. But later on, I realized that this is something I would like to pursue as an entrepreneurship, as a career. And then when I was trying to figure out a problem which I was confident enough of solving, I think during my transition phase from India to Singapore from a master's program, I came across this problem I was trying to solve for making cross-border payments or financial services for international students or immigrants much more cost-effective, much more accessible and affordable. And I thought this is a problem I could really solve well. And that's how I felt like I should probably take a shot at it. And that's how I went about it. So it was predominantly led by the problem and the solution I could build. It was primarily based on that. So I think those were a few things that probably contributed for my early stint in entrepreneurship.
Cool. And a lot of the audience that listens to this show is kind of like enthusiastic about becoming a founder, but they never make the move necessarily. Is there something you could tell them to kind of encourage them to you know, try their luck or try their work into entrepreneurship?
I mean, there are a bunch of factors how people go about approaching the entrepreneurship career path, right? Because in different stages of life, different things are important. Probably because I was early enough, young enough, there were not necessarily people financially dependent on me. I could take that leap of faith. Probably for someone probably much more older, probably when they have a family together, probably that could be a different equation altogether. But having said that, I will give you a generic framework as to how I think about going about pursuing entrepreneurship. I think for anyone to figure out the kind of problem, the kind of market, or the kind of solution they would like to build, predicts some time, easily 1 to 2 years or 3 years. So ideally having that runway to be able to get to that point where you are sustainable on your own, either through customer revenue or through external capital, through VCs or whatever the nature of capital that is, you would have to have certain runway to get to a point where you could build a business. I think that's one thing you would have to solve for. Second part is the team you would have to work with to get to that point. Now, that is early founding team members. How do you go about finding those kind of people? How do you go about building that trust with them? How do you go about building a company or a product with them in that initial phase? That is another one. I think solving for these two things firstly would give you that confidence to take a leap of faith and venture into entrepreneurship. So ideally, when you feel that you have solved for these two things, you could take a shot at them.
Love it. Very pragmatic answer. Very cool. Well, Abhinav, thank you so much for joining the show. It was really educational, and I'm really glad we made it. And I can't wait to kind of keep in touch with you to see when you decide to make that leap for the next startup, because I think it'll be exciting to have an episode then to discuss what made you decide at that specific moment and what you're going to be working on. I'm excited to stick around for the journey.
Certainly, Tim. I'll certainly reach out to you then. Great chatting with you.